Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan, a Thursday morning report on the Trump tariff plan. Like other Asian countries, Japan is quite upset at its tariff, which is 24%, and they had expected a break because of the investments they have done in the United States. Australian Prime Minister Albanese said that the 10% tariff was totally unwarranted. China wrapped up a large military exercise around Taiwan. 2,000 top researchers are urging the Trump administration to end a wholesale assault on science, like the federal budget cuts on medicine and climate change science. NHK Japan.
We start with U.S. President Donald Trump's stunning announcement of tariffs aimed at much of the global economy. From Saturday, all countries selling goods to the United States will face a minimum baseline levy of 10%. This will be followed by a series of targeted so-called reciprocal tariffs coming next week. Japan will face a 24% tariff. Other countries have steeper levies, including China at 34%, India at 26%, South Korea at 25%, and Vietnam at 46%. Trump's announcement has drawn a swift response from countries around the world, including here in Japan. Prime Minister Ishiba Shigeru says the measures will have a major impact on bilateral relations.
Our country has been the largest global investor in the United States since 2019. Japanese companies have played and continue to play a major role in the U.S. economy. We have been making requests at various levels for these unilateral tariff measures to be reviewed. It is extremely regrettable that they are being implemented in spite of our appeals.
Ishiba says he will continue urging Washington to reconsider. China has reacted sharply. A foreign ministry spokesperson says the country will take countermeasures to safeguard its interests.
The U.S. is violating WTO rules and causing serious damage to the rules-based multilateral trade system. China firmly opposes this and will take necessary steps to firmly protect our country's legitimate interests.
South Korea has been left stunned by the news it's getting slapped with a 25% tariff. At an emergency meeting on Thursday, Prime Minister and Acting President Han Duck-soo told his industry minister to open negotiations with the U.S. to minimize damage. Australia is getting hit with a relatively low 10% tariff, though Prime Minister Anthony Albanese calls this totally unwarranted.
The administration's tariffs have no basis in logic, and they go against the basis of our two nations' partnership. This is not the act of a friend.
Australia's Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has called a general election for May 3rd, but it's unclear whether his ruling Labour Party can retain power amid growing discontent over the economy.
And at a time where it's never been more important for Australia to stand on our own two feet, only Labour is building an economy where we make more things here.
The center-left Labour Party returned to power for the first time in 9 years in the 2022 general election. But it's facing challenges amid frustration with inflation and soaring housing prices. A recent poll shows a tight race between the Labour Party and the Conservative coalition, led by the largest opposition Liberal Party. The two-party preferred vote is tied at 50-50%. About half of the upper house seats will also be contested in the May election.
China's military says it wrapped up its exercises around Taiwan on Wednesday evening, the second day of the drills. The maneuvers came amid Beijing's criticism of the Taiwanese administration as being pro-independence. The military said it carried out drills in the central and southern areas of the Taiwan Strait, which runs between Taiwan and China's mainland. The drills, named Strait Thunder 2025A, reportedly involved testing sea blockage capabilities and precision strikes on key targets. The military said long-range live-fire drills in the East China Sea were also carried out. Taiwan's defense ministry said Chinese aircraft flew more than 70 sorties and 19 naval and other ships were spotted around Taiwan as of Wednesday morning. The ministry said some military aircraft entered Taiwan's air defense identification zone. U.S. State Department officials say China's military activities and rhetoric toward Taiwan only add to tensions and put the region and world at risk. They say Washington supports peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait and opposes unilateral changes to the status quo, including through force or coercion.
Meanwhile, top researchers are urging the Trump administration end what they call a wholesale assault on science. They warn his federal budget cuts could topple the U.S. as the global leader in research. Roughly 2,000 leading researchers, mostly from the U.S., published an open letter this week calling on Trump to reverse his campaign of spending slashes in their fields. They say the cuts are hitting medicine and climate change science especially hard. They warn other countries could soon overtake the U.S. in developing treatments for new diseases, clean energy sources, and other future technologies. Some American universities have already placed a freeze on hiring new researchers due to cost concerns.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 10 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times they announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK is available at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, France 24. Marine Le Pen has been the leader of the far right in France for many years. Many believed that she could win the next presidential election in 2027. She was just found guilty of embezzling money from the European Union for her political party and is banned from political office for 5 years. So we'll hear some press reviews about the volatile situation with the strong far-right movement in Europe. The United Nations says 15 international aid workers were executed by Israeli Defense Forces in Gaza, and there is a global outrage. France 24.
What are the French papers saying about Le Pen and the trial?
Well, exactly. Most of the French papers will have very similar front pages this morning. Facing Marine Le Pen's future that will be decided later in the French courts. La Dépêche du Midi today says Le Pen, l'heure de la vérité, or the moment of truth. Le Pen and her party are accused of embezzling money from the European Parliament using a fake job scam. On their front page, Le Libération says that her future hangs in the balance and highlights the crucial question: will Le Pen be able to run for president in 2027? She faces a €300,000 fine, a prison sentence, and a ban from standing, having a political position for the next 5 years. Now, Le Pen has accused prosecutors of seeking her political death. Let's have a look at Le Figaro today they say that her future is on a judicial edge. In their opinion piece, they say that if Le Pen were banned, it dares not imagine the cataclysm that some would call a judicial coup d'etat.
Well, Stuart, as you've been reporting, as we've all been reporting, the far-right leader has been convicted of corruption with a 5-year ban, notably on running for public office, meaning she's most likely going to be ineligible to run in the 2027 national elections here in France. Now, one word from La Croix, the Catholic paper in France, ineligible, that word indeed, noting that this is a huge shock for the National Rally far-right party in France and that it could also throw those 2027 elections into disarray. Now, in its editorial today, La Croix really says that, make no mistake about this, this is an inherently legal decision, even if it has huge political ramifications. The ruling, the paper reminds us, is based on texts and laws that were created, voted on years ago. And the paper particularly is alarmed by the response from the far right, notably Jordan Bardella, who has said that French democracy is being executed. La Croix reminding everyone today that the justice system is for everyone without exception. Now, from some of the left-wing papers today, this is from Libération, a big bold print there, coupable or guilty, it reads on its front page. According to L'Humanité and in its editorial, the communist paper calls Marine Le Pen's conviction a victory for democracy and for the state of law, and also slams those reactions from the far right and from what it calls the, quote, Bolloré media, a reference to the French media magnate Vincent Bolloré, who is very close to the far right. The paper saying also that the far right, for their part, are denouncing what they call a conspiracy against them.
Now, you mentioned the conservative media, Dipti. Take us through their reactions today.
Well, you have this here from Le Journal du Dimanche. This is a weekly paper here in France that is actually owned by that man I just mentioned, Vincent Bolloré. This paper here calling the court ruling on Monday as the day that destroyed Marine Le Pen's presidential destiny. The paper also laments what it sees as 20 years of her career being, quote, annihilated by one legal decision. From L'Opinion, another right-wing paper, they call it a political earthquake, going with this front-page cartoon here from the paper's cartoonist CAC, where you see Marine Le Pen being nailed to the wall by the hammer of justice. And in its editorial, the paper also warns of what it calls a moment of great democratic danger, and says that this legal decision really risks to paradoxically serve to feed populism in France. And finally, you also have Aujourd'hui en France, Le Parisien here, headlining on shockwaves, saying that it could also transform Marine Le Pen's right-hand man, the president of the National Rally Party, Jordan Bardella, into a valued asset of the party.
Outrage continuing over the deaths of 15 aid workers. It's from the Red Crescent. Now, the UN says they were actually executed by Israeli forces.
Yeah, that's right. And the New York Times is talking about it. In fact, the press is still talking about it. The aid workers killed in Gaza were shot multiple times. That's according to official sources. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society, of whom 8 members were killed, say the 15 bodies recovered earlier this week showed gunshot wounds. One paramedic was found bound with hands and feet bound. The paper adding that the UN, which is typically cautious about assigning blame, has openly blamed Israel on the deaths. Israeli authorities say a majority of those killed were Palestinian militants. This writer for Morningstar, a British socialist website, a left-wing website, say Palestinians have been betrayed in a world ruled by outlaws, really deploring what it sees as the lawlessness that the world is in right now. The paper reminding us also that it's been a year since the killing of 7 World Central Kitchen staff, all foreign citizens. That was last year. Israel was not sanctioned by the UN or world powers, so the website says they will just keep on killing aid workers.
Those press reviews and report were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, as well as most podcast sites. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Israel is stepping up its operations in Gaza, bombing a UN refugee camp in Gaza, killing 19, mainly women and children. Israel has said it is seizing parts of the Palestinian territory and destroying infrastructure. An Egyptian journalist, Karim El-Gawari, explains the situation and the failed ceasefires. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has arrived in Hungary on his first trip to Europe since the International Criminal Court issued a warrant for his arrest over his conduct of the war in Gaza. Hungary is a member of the ICC, but Prime Minister Viktor Orban has vowed to ignore the arrest warrant. Netanyahu's trip comes as Israel is stepping up its military operations in Gaza. The Hamas-run health ministry says an Israeli airstrike on a UN building on Wednesday killed 19 people, 9 of them children. The Israeli army says it targeted a militant center at the UN building located in Jabalia refugee camp.
This is what Israel's expansion of operations looks like in Gaza. People were going about their day-to-day lives at this former UN clinic housing hundreds of displaced Gazans. Moments later, an Israeli airstrike hit the building.
They fired 2 missiles without prior warning. My mum was cooking on fire over there. A child was playing in the alley. People who've done absolutely nothing to Israelis. They ended up being bombed, massacred, left without heads or legs. There were just body parts of children who did nothing to Israelis.
Israel says it will seize parts of the Palestinian territory, and its intensified operations are intended to pressure Hamas to release Israeli hostages.
The IDF is seizing territory, striking terrorists, destroying infrastructure, and taking other actions. We will take control of the Morag Corridor. This will be a second Philadelphia Corridor. We are now dissecting the Gaza Strip and increasing pressure step by step so that Hamas will return our hostages. The more they refuse, the more the pressure will increase until they do.
Around 100,000 people have been displaced in recent days from the southern city of Rafah, where Israel has expanded its operations. According to the UN, no supplies have entered Gaza for a month. Israeli pressure on Hamas is taking a heavy toll on Palestinians caught in the conflict. The United Nations say since last month's collapse of the ceasefire, over 1,000 people have been killed in Gaza. UNICEF calls it the most dangerous place in the world to be a child.
Let's bring in journalist Karim El-Gawari in Cairo for more on this. Karim, Benjamin Netanyahu has talked about setting up a new security corridor in Gaza to increase pressure on Hamas. What is this corridor and how does it force Hamas to return hostages?
Well, it's basically what they call the Morag Corridor. This is a line between Rafah in the most extreme south of the Gaza Strip and the next Palestinian city of Khan Yunis, a similar corridor as they already did in the middle of the Gaza Strip, separating the Gaza Strip into 2 pieces. This will separate the extreme south of the Gaza Strip from the rest. And what is also very important, I think, it will separate the Karam Shalom crossing, where until recently most of the aid came in from the rest of the Gaza Strip. Of course, mentioning that since the 2nd of March, no aid is coming in at all because of the complete Israeli blockade. The idea is to take more territory, to create pressure. An Israeli official said that by now their goal is to conquer about 25%, a quarter of the territory of the Gaza Strip within the next 2 or 3 weeks. An Israeli right group's Yisha saying that already now the Israeli army is occupying about 17% of the Gaza Strip, mainly on the outskirts as buffer zones. Israeli Channel 4 says this is a strategy to encircling Hamas, shrinking its territory, and apply maximum pressure.
Can you talk a bit more about the current aid situation in Gaza?
Well, there is zero, and this is really zero aid coming in since the 2nd of March. When you talk to aid organizations, they're becoming increasingly desperate inside. Their stocks are completely depleting. They used, of course, the former ceasefire to bring their stocks up a little bit. But now, since more than a month now, nothing coming in, it becomes increasingly desperate. Not only the food situation, but also if you talk to doctors in the hospitals, all the stocks are seriously declining.
And there are also now media reports that Hamas has rejected Israel's latest proposal for a truce in Gaza. What more can you tell us about that?
Well, I think you need to put this into context. First, you need to understand that there was a ceasefire deal agreed by all sides. And we were supposed to now be in the second phase of the ceasefire. And this second phase of the ceasefire would have meant the release of all hostages for a full withdrawal of the Israeli army and really a permanent ceasefire, meaning the end of the war. Netanyahu was not ready to negotiate this second phase. Instead, they resumed the Israeli offensive. And now, first, we had a new proposal from the negotiators, basically saying suggesting the release of five hostages, Israeli hostages, in exchange for several hundred Palestinian prisoners. And then immediately a talk on a permanent ceasefire and the Israeli withdrawal. And now we have an Israeli counter-proposal suggesting 10 hostages to be released in exchange for several Palestinian prisoners for a 40-day truce. And most importantly, the refusal to withdraw and to demand the disarmament as of Hamas as a condition that is by now, of course, rejected by Hamas as an Israeli attempt to derail any negotiations.
Thanks for putting all that into context for us. Journalist Karim El-Ghawari in Cairo. Thanks so much.
Those reports were from Germany's radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. DW Deutsche Welle is also up at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, there's a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show on the airwaves. And if you're listening on a public radio station, they soon will have an even greater need for your support as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The White House has deported another 17 Venezuelans to the maximum security prison in El Salvador. Trump says he will not rule out military force to seize Greenland, where Mrs. Vance, the second lady, was unable to find a single citizen to talk for public relations. Private Israeli groups are using facial recognition to identify pro-Palestinian campus protesters and submitting them for deportation. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The United States has deported more migrants to El Salvador despite a court order disputing the legality of the move. The administration of President Donald Trump announced that it sent 17 alleged violent criminals to El Salvador, despite a court order to stop the move. Nayib Bukele, an advocate of mass incarceration who has offered to take in inmates from the United States in exchange for money, responded sarcastically on social media that the judge's court order came too late. The Trump administration has asked the Supreme Court to overturn the lower court's hold, arguing it flagrantly infringes on presidential authority. The federal judge's order left the door open for deportations under other authorities. An initial appeal by the Trump administration was turned down, with one appeals court judge saying that even Nazis got better treatment from the United States during the Second World War. During his campaign trail, Trump promised his supporters that he would clamp down on immigration. U.S. President Donald Trump has told NBC News that he won't rule out using military force to take Greenland from Denmark. Trump's comment came a day after Vice President J.D. Vance visited Greenland as part of his delegation with his wife Usha Vance, National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, and Energy Secretary Chris Wright. On a scaled back trip, they only visited a remote U.S. space base north of the Arctic Circle. The base is about 1,000 miles north of Greenland's capital, Nuuk. During a speech to U.S. troops, Vance repeatedly accused Denmark of neglecting Greenland. One Danish TV channel reported U.S. officials went door-to-door in Greenland looking for locals who would be willing to meet with the Second Lady, Usha Vance, but the U.S. officials couldn't find anyone interested. Usha Vance was originally scheduled to go to Greenland's National Dog Sledding Championship, but under pressure, the U.S. dramatically scaled back the scope of the trip, which Greenland's prime minister criticized as highly aggressive. In Nuuk, residents criticized the U.S. vice president for coming to Greenland. One Nuuk resident said, "I don't want the U.S. to invade us. They can do their own business, military business, in Thule, but they're not welcome here in Nuuk." Sionist groups in the United States have been using facial recognition technology to identify and report pro-Palestinian activists railing against the Israeli regime's genocidal war in Gaza to U.S. federal agents, a report has revealed. According to an investigation by AP, foreign activists who took part in widespread campus protests against Washington's support for the Israeli genocide of Palestinians in Gaza are being exposed by pro-Israeli groups who are using facial recognition technology to identify them. According to the report, a New York-based software engineer named Elijah Hawila provided a facial recognition tool he built and called Nesher AI to the Zionist organization Beta US. The Zionist organization used the tool to identify masked pro-Palestinian protesters, compiling a list of them, which was then handed over to U.S. federal officials to clamp down on them. U.S. President Donald Trump, during his campaign trail, promised his supporters that he would clamp down on student demonstrations he accused of un-American activity. After returning to the White House, he signed an executive order ordering officials to deport foreign students who had participated in pro-Palestinian protests. The Trump administration prompted related federal agencies to take a tougher stance against foreigners supportive of the Palestinian cause. The American branch of the Batar Zionist movement, Batar US, has sent thousands of names of Palestine defenders to the administration of President Donald Trump for potential arrest and deportation.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6060 or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts. Get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.